First movement.
One.
Today on Classical Conversations, we are celebrating an extraordinary release that presents two different versions of the Symphony in F sharp by Erich Wolfgang Korngold. One is a piano recording performed by Korngold himself, the audio for which was uncovered in the Korngold Family Archives. The other is a 1997 live orchestral performance by conductor John Mauchery and the Italian Swiss Radio Orchestra. So here we cross paths with Maestro Mauchery, who is an internationally renowned conductor, author, and one of the key figures in the unfolding of this release, as well as Leslie Korngold, the composer's grandson. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, happy to be here.
As I'm learning more about the Korngold Symphony, I'm seeing just how many puzzle pieces had to come together to make this possible. If you could tell us a little bit about maybe how the two of you got connected originally, some of the interactions and conversations that brought this about.
All right. Well, that's a very, very interesting set of circumstances. I was living north of Los Angeles in 1991. And we received a phone call at our home from Maestro Mauchery. He had informed us that he was now going to be the conductor of the newly formed Hollywood Bowl Orchestra, which would be focusing much of its activities and repertoire on the music that was produced in California. Of course, my grandfather spent a good part of his career right here in California, in Los Angeles, composed for film, which was to comprise a significant element of what the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra and John would perform. And that was the genesis. He contacted us because he wanted the connection with the families and with the composers themselves to really reintroduce or to introduce to Los Angeles, their musical heritage.
That would be true. Surprisingly enough, Mary Claire, although Erich Korngold lived in Los Angeles from the mid-30s until his death in 1957, only one time had he actually conducted a concert in the 1930s at the Hollywood Bowl, and never after that, and never was his music played by the Los Angeles Philharmonic. So this was, I mean, he's one example of many composers whose music was just kind of erased or forgotten or forbidden. And Los Angeles happens to be an epicenter, as everyone knows, of many refugee artists and writers, and above all, composers, because in 1933, with the huge success of a film called King Kong, it proved that writing music under dramatic scenes was not only viable, it helped make a fairly mediocre movie with an unbelievable kind of monkey puppet into a huge success. That meant that every studio wanted composers and wanted music for all of their releases because of sound film and the ability to put music under dialogue. Well, at the same time, Hitler had closed any possibility for any composer he didn't like, whether they were Jewish or just made him angry. And so the greatest of those young composers who had all graduated from the greatest conservatories of Europe found the only place where they might have a chance to have their music performed and might be able to support their families was Los Angeles and the film industry. And Erich Korngold was one of those composers. So that's really how this kind of journey started for me.
When you discovered that original recording in the archives, what was that moment like for you? Did you know, like, what you had in your hands?
We were both really surprised, right, Les?
Yeah, no, this was a wonderful collision of events. My father had passed away in 1987, so I inherited this sound archive, and I didn't know what was in it. In fact, It was at my home for 8 years in boxes, completely unopened. And it was around the same time that John had began working with the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra that I coincidentally, through the efforts of another individual who was very interested in Korngold, Tony Thomas was his name, he connected me with an individual in Los Angeles, a music archivist by the name of Lance Bowling. And they encouraged me to get this out of the boxes and to begin to transfer some of these materials into a digital format to preserve them. And so that's when I discovered this. As we went through old recordings, whether they were on tape or whether they were acetate phonograph records, one by one, we just began to play them and the symphony appeared. And it was about the same time, again, that John's interest in our conversations began. And so his curiosity as to what I had really coaxed some things out of that archive and brought that to light.
I would say, if I can make a slight correction historically on this, there was another series of records. I mean, I was making recordings with the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra in Los Angeles, but I was also making records in Berlin of a series that the Decca Record Company had committed to of entartete Musik, or degenerate music, the word that the Nazis used for music that they banned. I was a principal conductor to record operas and symphonies and concertos of music that had been banned by Hitler. Now, what makes this significant is that I was learning in 1991 the composers and their histories in Hollywood. Of course, at that time, there were almost no books at all to find out who these people were. And on the other hand, I was learning about the composers who were on Hitler's list of music that could not be performed. And much to my surprise, there are names on both lists that were the same. And I never knew the history of Hollywood film music and who these composers actually were. Now, when I was asked to record in Berlin an album of Korngold's music, which is something called Between Two Worlds is the name of that album. And half of it is a restoration of music from the film Between Two Worlds, which was one of Korngold's favorites, but also included the symphonic serenade. So I asked Leslie if he had anything, and indeed he had a recording of his grandfather playing the symphonic serenade on the piano as a guide to Wilhelm Furtwängler when he would conduct presumably the world premiere of it. Now, that informed my recording, and because you could hear Korngold, the give and take, the tempo changes, how he addressed certain things. Now, then a few years later, I had the opportunity to do the symphony. I called Leslie again, and I said, I can't believe I'm asking you again, because this can't be possible. And Leslie said, No, John, I don't think so. And that's when you went, and a few days later called me back, and you said that there was a box at the top of some, I don't know, thing which had nothing on it, and you opened it, and there it was, the symphony. So this was a double miracle, I have to say, because I don't think Leslie, well, I'm pretty sure you didn't know this existed, and I, of course, had never heard it. In fact, no one had ever heard it. And so as a result, we got to listen to Grandpa, the composer, play the symphony. And I was able to use that information as a way of entering into its meaning. You know, there's a difference between what does it say and what does it mean. And we conductors have to kind of be composers in the sense of, what does this mean? I mean, these are notes, we can follow them, we can conduct an andante or an allegro, but there's a lot of meaning. We all have a collective understanding of what Western music means. And that's where that journey really took us to this recording that has just been released of Grandpa, of Eric Korngold playing the symphony, and one of my performances, the one I did with the Italian radio, Swiss radio orchestra in 97. This was an extraordinary kind of moment where the composer's grandson was the medium from the composer to this guy who's talking to you, in doing the very thing that we believe was the purpose of his making that recording in the first place.
So when Eric Korngold first composed that symphony, did he begin with the orchestral score and then create a piano reduction, or was it vice versa?
No, he wrote at the piano first. If you talk to all the people who'd ever heard him play, and there are some recordings besides the symphony recording, he played the piano like a virtuoso. I mean, he played like it sounded like a symphony. When he hit the keyboard, nobody played like Erich Wolfgang Korngold. And so he was playing the piano from seemingly the day he was born, when Helen Korngold, who was it's kind of hard. Erich Korngold had two children. Ernst was the eldest, the firstborn, and George, who was Leslie's father. And I knew Ernst, and I knew his wife Helen quite well. And they said, well, Erich always played the piano. No one could remember a time that that little boy wasn't at the keyboard. So he started at the piano. And so that, but then he orchestrated the symphony later.
What are some of the adjustments that you have to make when, as you're listening to the reference recording and thinking about how it would play out for a symphony orchestra? I was looking at the timings of things, even. I noticed one of the movements, the scherzo in the piano version, is much, much shorter than in the orchestral version. I wondered about some of the differences there.
Well, first of all, in the scherzo, he only plays certain parts of that scherzo. He doesn't play the repeats. The way a scherzo is constructed, there are literal structural repeats. So Korngold didn't need to play it again, Sam, as it were. However, what you ask for is a really good point, because once you translate the piano into orchestra, lots of things change. Some things remain the same, and the things that remain the same were the part that really struck me. But what changes is, in order for an orchestra to play, they have to hear each other in order to fit this jigsaw puzzle of notes, so that the trumpets are with the violas, who are with the harp, who are with the basses. You know, it's an most amazing kind of mind meld, as you might say, of this willingness of everybody in an orchestra, 80 people, listening to each other, playing very different instruments frequently with very different attack times to actually play together. Now, when you get to something like the scherzo, which is a good example, Korngold plays that as a tempo that even he can't play it. And that's part of why I came to understand what I believe is the real meaning of this symphony. Because if somebody that good cannot even play his own notes because he's chosen a speed that is so full of panic, so full of I don't know, rage, fear, whatever, then you start to say, well, what actually is this about? This is not a Mendelssohn scherzo. This is not a little joke. This is something very, very different. And again, that's where part of why the family and others have wanted this release to happen, with an example of one of my performances, because Korngold's playing of it informed me of a meaning that went beyond the notes. Why did he write this symphony? Why did he say it wasn't a program symphony, when in point of fact, I believe it absolutely was? And nothing made me happier than to perform it for Ernst Korngold and Helen. The last time Ernst heard his father's music played was with the Boston Symphony, and he wrote back to me and told me that he felt I was absolutely right, because he remembered his father calling one of the melodies a theme of reconciliation. Now, if you're writing a symphony that has no program, you don't start naming your themes, right? You just write the first theme, a second theme, you write some. So at that point, having heard a performance that I conducted with the great Boston Symphony, I got that moment from the son, who, after all, being older than George, he was there when his father was writing the symphony. He knew what was going on. And so that really helped a lot for me to understand and to get that kind of approbation from Ernst Korngold.
What would you say would be a helpful approach to listening to the album? Because I mean, we have these side by side. Would you listen to each once through and go back and compare different sections? It seems to me like something worth listening over many times.
Yeah. I don't know, Leslie, I don't know if you've got an idea on that. My because people do this digitally now, they have so many ways to mix and match. You can listen to Eric Korngold, say, do the first movement and then hear the performance that we did. It becomes a revelation of what does that actually sound like. What were the sounds that Korngold was hearing when he was playing the piano? Because he wasn't hearing a piano. He already in his imagination had that first melody on a clarinet. He definitely had the second melody in the first movement on flutes. That becomes really kind of an overwhelming sense of being a participant in the transformation of a piece of music. You know, if we had a recording of Beethoven playing his Fifth Symphony on a forte piano, that would be, of course, fantastically interesting. I mean, how much give and take? How much rubato? What would he have wanted? Now, again, for me, that would be the way to do it. I have, for example, made a little edit, for example, of the opening of the third movement with Korngold playing it on the piano and then dissolving it into the orchestra playing it. And when people hear that, their mouths drop because of how that was translated into notes. So I think this is a kind of almost like a video game, but an audio game for people. They can listen to Eric Korngold play it from beginning to end, knowing that the scherzo is not complete, or they can listen to it piece by piece, and they can just, you know, live with either version of this as they want.
And, you know, there's so many different ways to look at this when you hold it up to the light, but the orchestral performance, of course, presents it in its intentional form, and you hear the music in its entirety. I think when you listen to the piano version, or at least when I do, it becomes very personal, and you meet and you hear the composer. And it's a different look entirely. So what you should listen to first or second, I really don't have an answer for that. I think that's the unraveling and the exploration of this wonderful recordings, both of these wonderful recordings, and to come to your own conclusions. I mean, this is an adventure. It's a discovery.
Les, what was your relationship like with your grandfather? Do you feel like this music helped you to get to know him?
Well, you hit the nail on the head there. I was very young when my grandfather passed away. I was just about 2 years old. And so for me, you know, this whole process of listening to this sound archive that I had, that was really, in a very real sense, the way I met my grandfather. Of course, I'd heard stories, I'd seen pictures, heard from my father, from my uncle, from my mother, from others about the man. But here, I heard his voice. I heard his musical voice. And there were moments when it took my breath away because I was hearing someone who had been gone for many, many years and you know, was just not far removed from me. So it provided a lot of connective tissue for me and answered a lot of questions and raised a lot of new ones. But it was a wonderful exploration. I feel I met my grandfather.
The beautiful moment. There's an overwhelming feeling of legacy there.
Well, I also must, I don't know, I don't want to put words in Les's mouth, but I know when I met some of the great-grandchildren, one of them said to me, if it weren't for Robin Hood, which was the score that Eric Korngold was asked to write in Los Angeles in 1938, and if it weren't for America, this kid said, I would not exist. Leslie Korngold would not exist on this planet if Hitler had his way with Erich Wolfgang Korngold. The fact is that his uncle got out of Vienna on the last train before the borders were closed. His father, Leslie's father, was in Los Angeles with mommy and daddy, but his older brother was in middle school and high school in Vienna, and they had to get him out immediately. And so part of the panic, for example, that you hear in the scherzo is that, I believe, is that panic. There's a letter from Julius Korngold, who was Eric Korngold's father, who was in Switzerland, having escaped with his wife and with Ernst. And he could not believe how fast Austria had turned into a Nazi country. In a week, what was going on in his own country, and he just really wanted to die. They realized that they got out with, on the just at the last moment. In fact, Ernst, famously, this is a story they told all the time in the Korngold family. Because the train was so packed, Ernst sat on the lap of a Nazi soldier. So in comes a teenage Ernst, Uncle Ernst for Leslie, who is enrolled in high school, North High School, North Hollywood High. And he graduates as a valedictorian. I mean, he learned English and graduated from valedictorian. And what is the first thing he wanted to do? Join the Marines. Now, the story of heroism and of our country saving these people. Oh, yes, we lost so many millions. And we focus on that and we treasure that and we never forget that. At the same time, this symphony is an example of survival and triumph. It is, after all, dedicated to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who, from Korngold's point of view, saved his family's life. And that again becomes part of the triumph of its ending.
I'd like to mention too, for the benefit of our listeners, that the liner notes on this album are very extensive with essays from both of you. Are there any final reflections that you wanted to point out or acknowledgments you'd like to share?
I can say certainly thanks to Richard Guerin. It was his efforts to bring John's recording from the Italian Swiss Orchestra to release it. And it was as a result of his excitement and interest in this project that the three of us came together to, I think, in the end result was something quite different than it started out to be. So certainly, much gratitude to Richard for all of his efforts and guidance in bringing all of this together.
And from my point of view, there's so much to be thankful for. I think when people listen to the orchestral version, they should remember this is a single performance. We had, what, three rehearsals, and it was only part of that concert. There's no editing. This is the actual performance, no post-performance editing where you send the audience out and you fix things. And so you're hearing an orchestra that is playing the symphony for the first time and for an audience. Almost everybody certainly was hearing it for the first time. And the audience joins in this performance because you will not hear, I think you hear one cough during its 40-minute duration, which says a lot about the success of this symphony, an unknown work for people in Switzerland who, very cultured people who go to the subscription series of their orchestra. So we're grateful that it was broadcast because it is a radio orchestra of superb musicians. And the fact that Richard Guerin, who you point out, Leslie, who heard this recording and has worked over the years to get the rights to be able to release it, now, which he did. Then I personally have to thank the Korngold family for their unwavering support of me. And I'm a little embarrassed that I should be put up, in a release against the composer, as it were. Many great conductors now have recorded the symphony. None of them has had the benefit of hearing what I heard. So the fact that the Korngold family, along with Richard, believes that something in the way I can interpret this music is inspired by the actual sound of the composer playing a guide track, as it were, is pretty overwhelming, and I remain totally honored and slightly embarrassed and thrilled that this would be out.
Comments today from conductor John Mauteri and Leslie Korngold on Eric Wolfgang Korngold's Symphony in F sharp. Thank you both so much for joining me.
Yes, thank you so much, Mary Claire.
Thank you, Mary Claire.
Bye.